gals from Equine Connection, the Academy of Equine Assisted Learning. Hi, I'm Carrie.
I'm Carolyn.
And I'm Carson.
Welcome to our podcast.
You will be listening to some of our best moments of helping people to live their best lives, and all while, get this, working with horses.
We will be your hosts and have tons of guests along the way. Subscribe today and happy listening.
Hello. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So excited that you are joining us today because we were so excited, well, which we always are every week with our guests, but her brain that you are going to get to delve into today and the welfare piece, because that's our biggest thing here at the Equine Connection as well.
And that's why we're doing this whole series.
Exactly. Yeah. Is, you know, helping all of us who have a horse or considering owning a horse, the welfare piece, what the horse has to have in order to actually live a very healthy and successful life, actually parallel to humans as well.
Absolutely.
So we're excited today.
Yes, because we have the wonderful Gail Ecker here from Guelph University, and I'm going to have to read her bio.
Yes.
Because otherwise I'll mess it up, to be completely honest. And it's a longie.
Because she is so smart, but should we introduce ourselves first?
Oh, right, us. Every time, guys.
We do this all the time. Hi, everyone. My name is Carrie Fulmick, the founder of the Equine Connection, the Academy of Equine Assisted Learning, a master instructor helping people globally do what we do, and that is working with horses versus using them to help other human beings be able to move forward in their lives. Because sometimes people don't want to hear it from a human, but they love hearing how they move forward with a horse, because humans are smart. We do have the answers to our problems, but sometimes it gets stuck and lost where that horse is so magnificent in helping us to get to the full answer within each individual human.
Yes. And my name is Carolyn Charles. I'm the director of sales and marketing, as well as a facilitator and an instructor for the Equine Connection, the Academy of Equine Assisted Learning.
That's the first time I've messed up our name.
I know.
It's all right. She's introduced herself as Carrie Fulmick before too.
That happened once. It was a long day. Let's go to Gail.
Okay.
Instead of making fun of me. All right. So Gail was initially the senior manager of Equine Guelph when the center was opened in 2003, and she played an instrumental role in its birth. So think about this, people. We're going back to 2003 and the birth of it. After promotion to managing director, Gail continued to develop new programs and bring in new partners. She has dedicated her energies to advancing the equine industry through education and communications. Gail created the Pyramid of Education model, an educational approach that provides learning pathways for career development at all levels, youth education, industry skills, equine science certificate, and higher education in the equine industry. In collaboration with the Office of Open Learning, Gail developed the Equine Science Certificate Program, an online program targeted to the equine industry as well. She also acts as an instructor for the program. So that's just the work side. Gail started riding before she could even walk. She dappled gray Shetland pony named Pogo was her first mount, known as the show junkie. Gail spent her youth competing in Arabian shows. A former researcher, so take that in too, a former researcher who's put all this together. Beautiful. Gail's expertise in the area of exercise physiology, I was going to say psychology, physiology, I was right there. She has been the assistant chef d'équipe. She's going to tell me how to properly say that when she comes on, for the Canadian endurance team, traveling around the globe with the team to international events like the Pan Am and World Endurance Championships. She takes pleasure in riding her two quarter horses these days through wooded trails in her country home as well. So please help us to welcome the lovely Gail. Let's see if I can do this now. Yay!
Hi, Gail!
Hello, everybody. Thank you for inviting me on. This is great fun.
Well, you know, it's such an honor to have you on with us and, of course, collaborating with you. I think, what, did we meet 2 years ago?
Yes,
I knew about that. You blew us away just in those 3 hours that we were together.
Yeah.
Because of all your knowledge, your research, and, of course, your love for the horse. Like, that's the part that's so powerful.
You betcha. Mm-hmm. And we should let people know too. Feel free to comment and ask questions as we go along. We'll try to get to them. I see Todd and Tanya McNeese are on here. Good to see you guys. So happy to see you as well. Well, know that you're there to watch us because we don't see you. But so, please feel free to comment.
Absolutely. Do we need to talk about Holy Jumping Tuna Fish yet, or ask one question first?
Okay.
So, Gail, what do you think one of the biggest misconceptions is of the care of the horse?
That's an excellent question, and it's kind of a complicated answer. But if we boil it right down to its absolute base, it's people not respecting the horse as a horse. It's not a bicycle, it's not a dog, and it's not a human. And so one of the biggest problems that I hear is someone goes, oh, I don't like being out in the rain, so I'm going to keep my horse in the stall. Or I'm really cold today, so I'm going to put extra blankets on my horse. Or, you know, things like that. Or they treat it like a dog. And we have to understand a horse is a horse, and that's all it can be, is a horse. It's not your partner in life. It's, you know, it can be a great friend. It can be a buddy. But you cannot be an alpha horse in the herd. The horse knows you're not a horse.
Yes.
You know, they don't accept. You're a human. They're a horse. They accept you into their herd as a human. But they know you're a human. And we have to understand and respect they are a horse.
Wow, that's so powerful. I love how you said that so short. And it makes logical sense.
That's rare for me, being short on my answers.
I love it. But that respect piece is so true. And I love that you even mentioned the part with the bicycle. Because they aren't just a tool, right? They aren't just like they are a live being that we have to also look out for as well and treat like a horse. Like, we don't have the hair, so we don't need the blanket, right? The kind of thing. But it's nice to hear you say that, the respect piece, because I think that's at the foundation of all of it. Well, you know, it's funny.
It starts the foundation, yes.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, I've always said it'd be interesting if, because a horse is so huge, like we're looking at, you know, 1,000 to 2,500 pounds, however big they can obviously get to, but you know, we should have a license to own a horse. It's kind of like if we had an elephant, you would have to know how to look after that elephant and where he's actually supposed to do and what he's supposed to be having. It would be the same thing with a horse, because I don't, you know, sometimes we want to do all those things that you said, but it's not fair to the horse, because a horse can only think and act like a horse. And we're thinking it should be more like a dog or a human, but it's not.
No.
So if understood those pieces, it would be so much more beneficial to our horses.
And I think if we relate it back to the work that you're doing, you're teaching humans to try and think like other humans. And that's hard for us, right? So I look at a situation and I see it very differently than you do or anybody else does. But in working through your program, we try and understand what that person is thinking, how they're viewing the world. And that's very, very hard for us. So now think how hard it is for us to think like another species. Right? If I told you to think like a fish, that'd be so, so hard for us to do.
I know. A lot of days I'm like Dory from Finding Nemo.
So when we tell people you have to think like a horse, understand the world from a horse's point of view, it's hard. And many of us, we think we do. We think we can. But we have to ask ourselves, are we really understanding this from the horse's point of view?
Mm-hmm. I love that. And you're going to help us with all of that today. So this
I will try. Yeah.
Well, and we'll let everybody know too, the welfare guide as well, because I think everybody should read that sucker.
You know, that book alone, it's so interesting. I'm not a huge, it's got to be interesting for me to read through everything. The book is phenomenal. Yes. Like, it gets you excited about the read as you're learning the welfare component of the horse. Mm-hmm. So
it makes layman sense.
Yes.
Like, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure it out. It makes perfect sense as to why you would work that way. So great job.
And that's a very important document too, because we have to understand how that came to be. It's evidence-based. So there was a group of scientists and horse owners from all different sectors of the horse industry who came together, and they reached consensus on what is best practices right across the country. And so it's got the best practices, and then it's got recommended practices. So something we should be striving for. And it is a very important document, and it has been held up as a model for other countries. So really, Canada, you know, has put itself out there as one of the leaders in horse welfare with the release of that document.
I know our facilitators in Australia have loved it.
Yes.
I think it's phenomenal as well. Yep. And I mean, a good read, like it's like reading a book where you're really into it. You can't stop reading it. So it is a phenomenal document. I have to agree.
Yeah, so, I agree. The committee did a great job on it. And I really do ask people to, they can download a copy from the web, so it's free. And just use it for reference. I mean, you know, you don't have to read it cover to cover. I do these things, but you know, I'm probably one of the few that sat down and read the thing cover to cover as soon as it came out. But it's a reference. Yeah, consider it a reference document. So as you're working through it, you take a look at management, you take a look at feeding, you take a look at, you know, what we'll talk about, the five freedoms. You know, go back and just reference that from time to time and use it. And it's great for that perspective. Yeah, and that's absolutely key for us when we're dealing with horses, is get your own emotion out of it.
Yes.
It's not about me, it's about the horse. So every time we have those phrases that I'm getting frustrated, I don't like the way my horse is behaving, I, the moment you hear that language, get it off the table.
And it's funny because even our clients that come through, a lot of times they'll be like, well, this horse is really frustrated. And we know that means they are really frustrated. It's not that the horse is just reacting like a horse and responding to stimulus. It has nothing to do with, oh, the horse is frustrated right now. It could just be the reaction to it and they're frustrated. And they always put that on the horse, but instead it's them that's feeling the emotion.
Yeah, it's easy to blame the horse for sure, because you hear that, well, he's a jerk. Oh, he's just being stupid. Oh, he's misbehaving purposely to do that to me. That's not what horses do.
No, exactly. So our second question.
Yes. So what are some of the ways that Guelph is really bringing a better understanding of the equine welfare in? So we talked about the guide, but what are some other ways that you guys are bringing that in?
Yeah, so we've got a really comprehensive program that we offer. We have a program that we call Equimania, and that's for the kids and their family. And so it's all about youth, and we teach health, welfare, and safety, because we want safety of kids around horses, safety of adults around horses. We want the horse to be safe as well. And then, of course, the health and welfare part of it. Moving up from there, we have the horse portal. And if you go to the horseportal.ca, there's some short courses there, because we know people are busy. Money is one of the things. We'd rather put it into our horses. I get that. So we have some very inexpensive short courses that are 1, 2, or 3 weeks that we offer on the horse portal. Some really good information on biosecurity, which far too many of us ignore. And I'll just put across, hope is not a strategy when it comes to disease.
So we
hope it won't happen to us. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that phrase. Well, I hope it doesn't happen. Well, that's not good enough, right? Because that horse is locked in a stall, and whether it's disease or fire or emergency preparedness, we can't just hope it won't happen. We should actually take responsibility to make sure we're ready for it as best we can. So from the horse portal, then we move up into the next level. So people who are now ready, okay, I want to do the deep dive. I really want to understand this. I want to approach this from an evidence-based point of view so that I know that whatever is being said to me actually has some weight and some value. And then we offer 12-week courses, and we have over 20 to choose from now. And those are part of a certificate or a diploma from the University of Guelph. So we were the first university to offer accredited courses on healthcare for horses and safety. And so there's a science certificate, a welfare certificate, a business certificate, where you work on your own business and develop your own business plan, and you work on advertising communication. So it helps you right through one end of your business to the other. And then if you combine those, it becomes a diploma from the University of Guelph, which most people can get done in 2 to 3 years.
Wow, nice. That's pretty sweet.
And I've actually taken one of the short courses on the horse portal, and it was great. There was some interactive things, some reading. I could go back to the guide and go through it all. Like, it was really interactive, but it makes you think too. It's not, you know, some online courses you go and you're like, I don't actually have to think to do this, but
you
it actually
think.
Makes you process the information and gets you deeper into it. So they're really great courses.
Yeah. Yeah. We try not to do the data dump. So we're actually trying to make it a little bit more interactive and fun. And I think that's what differentiates our courses. You actually have an instructor there. We bring in guest speakers. We try and let you read stuff, listen to stuff, watch stuff. So it's not just sitting there reading a textbook.
Yeah, that's exciting because that's what, to me, learning should be all about. You should have all of those components because some of us need that different interaction than just a read.
Yeah, well, and as an educator, part of my training is understanding the audience. And we know horse owners are tactile kinesthetic learners.
Yes.
Which means we have to touch stuff. We have to do stuff. So we don't like to just sit back and read a textbook. We want to be involved in it. And so we try and do that through the online environment. You interact with each other. You ask other students questions. Our students help each other. The instructor's there. The guest speaker's there. Lots of different things that we try and implement in those courses.
Value. So this next question, Gail, it was so exciting when we met with her. And she says, she asks almost every horse person that she even talks to on the phone this very question. So it was a great question to ponder as well. Like, good health or is it good welfare?
Yeah, and ask it the way you asked it, though, because you
yes, because she did it so beautiful. And when she threw out the question, you had to, like, I was, you know, you think you would jump on the one, but it's like, no, logically, it would have to be the other. So we're going to let you say it the way you say it and then see what the people say, because I'd love for them to also put in what they think.
Yes.
All right. So, yeah, they can answer it then. So pop quiz, true or false, good health equals good welfare.
That's much better.
So yes. Think about that. True or false, good health equals good welfare.
So we want to see you guys' comments in here right now just to see what you guys think. True or false? Oh, and Tanya and Todd wrote, tell Carson we decided to win something. Holy jump.
I don't know if there's anything to win.
So, yeah, you know, we think about that. And oftentimes when you ask people that good health equals good welfare, they'll say true, right? If you've got good health, then yes, you have good welfare. But we can have good welfare even though our health may not be perfect. And so you might have some arthritis in your back, but overall life's good. You have a quality of life. And so that's the important thing that we have to think about. Good health is hugely a part of good welfare. Because if a horse is in pain or suffering or can't get out with his buddies or whatever, then obviously welfare is compromised. But welfare is the overriding concept that we have to think about. And good health, if you think of it as one of the table legs. So if we've got a table with four legs, yes, you might have some compromises on health. But as long as you're taking care of those, that horse could still have good welfare.
Absolutely. I love that one. I just think it's so deep, but yet it makes so much logical sense. And, you know, if we can always maintain that idea every day we're with the horse, really think about, is this a welfare piece that's really helping with the horse? Because I agree, we can all have good health, but if we have good health and we have nothing around to keep our welfare going, and now see, I'm doing a comparison here, but just so we can honestly see that it really makes a huge difference for a human being as well, and also a horse, but a horse can only think and act like a horse. That's why we have to take care of the welfare of the horse, because we're keeping them enclosed. They're not free to just do and be like a horse anymore in a lot of these situations.
Well, it's taking their emotional, it's like psychologically kind of thing. It's taking that part into account as well. Not just the heartbeat's good, the legs work fine. It's the whole encompassing horse.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because that's where we used to be. All right. So when we talked about a welfare of an animal, they'd say, well, it's not sick, it's not in pain. So therefore, all's good. Right. But in studying this, and researchers have spent a lot of time on looking into this and diving into it in much more depth. And they've actually started to ask the animal what the animal wants. And that's a very interesting thing, because we make assumptions. We think if the horse is not in pain, we think if the horse is not hungry, no problem, good welfare. Right. But now they're actually starting to change the research. So they're asking the animal what the animal wants. And that's going to change things a whole lot in the future for us.
Ooh, yeah, I have shivers all over the place because that is so exciting. That's my kind of great research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love where we are on that. And so the welfare researchers out there, I commend them because they just keep pushing the envelope. And so moving the dial forward each year when they publish some of these studies. And it's a very exciting field to be in.
Yes, absolutely. And it's a field that more people should be getting into because like the kids and that sort of thing, they're starting to not have the same interaction with horses as they used to. And that's one thing that we always love is being able to bring the kids in for the first time and the first time they get to see a horse because the field is going, you know, not so great in that side with more kids. It's more city life, right? So we need to get our kids into understanding these beautiful horses as well so that they can start to move forward and be in this field too.
Right. Yes. Yeah, for sure. So pushing it out to youth, I mean, that's the time when they learn how to get away out of themselves, if you will, because if we start teaching kids about horses and let them interact with horses, that's one of the best things we can do for empathy.
Seriously.
Because we get them to think about the horse and it's not about themselves. And so that's now getting a good start on teaching empathy for kids.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I was a city slicker growing up. I always think to myself, man, what would have happened to my life differently had I had a horse all these years and not just in my 30s that I started during 20s.
It's okay. 20s. It's okay.
Yeah. But I'll be here. So we've got one more question here for you too. And this is a longie, so I'm going to read it. But we all know that wild or feral horses have the choice and control to be able to ensure their own welfare, right? So do you think that through respecting their basic instincts, herding, that sort of thing, foraging, that they need as a prey animal is one of the best ways to look after their welfare?
That's a great start, right? So I often talk about when I'm talking to kids, I'll say, you know, in real estate, it's location, location, location. Well, in horses, I talk about the three Fs, friends, forage, and freedom. And so if they're in with friends, they've got lots of forage, grass and hay, good diet, and they've got freedom to move around. Now you've just got the basics of that welfare for those horses started. Awesome. But I do encourage people to actually think about what we call the five freedoms.
Yes.
Because that's the level that we as adults need to be considering is it's more than just letting your horse out during the day. It's about those five freedoms. And so that's freedom from hunger and thirst. So make sure they've got access to water and a healthy diet. Freedom from discomfort. And that means they've got shelter when they want it. They can choose to go in and out of the shelter, that they can lay down, that they're not restricted. You know, that's absolutely horrible in our industry where we'll put side reins on a horse and leave them in the stall for 4 hours to try and make a head presentation, you know, on the curve of the neck and the rest of it. I mean, that's part of that freedom from discomfort. None of us would want that, and a horse sure doesn't. The third one is freedom from pain, injury, and disease. So that includes prevention of pain, injury, and disease, as well as rapid detection, diagnosis, and treatment of that. That's one of our absolute obligations as an owner. Freedom to express normal behavior. So that's space to move around, the company of other horses. Don't stick a donkey in there and think you've done your work. Again, horses know that's not a horse.
Wow.
They know it's a donkey, so put horses with horses. It's important for them. And then the last one is freedom from fear and distress. And so that's avoid mental stress, mental suffering of that horse. And if we really want to try and promote this, it's developing a life worth living.
Yes.
So it's not just an absence of negative state of mind. It's helping to promote a positive state of mind in that horse. And so that's the goal, I think, should be for every person out there with a horse. It's not a bicycle. Think about a life worth living for the horse to be a horse. And then we're getting closer to reaching an ideal goal.
You bet. That mental health piece that you said, that really is so huge. And you said, now a donkey, they know it's a donkey. A goat, they're going to know it's a goat. So if a lonely horse is all by himself, we're taking away a lot of that welfare piece then for that poor horse who's just all by himself, because their number one thing they need to feel is safe. So how do you feel safe if you have no one else even with you? No one else. No other horse, not a person.
Yes. Well, and that's it. If you're a prey animal, hardwired into your brain is to be alone is to die.
Yes.
if you're out there on the African forest or through the grasslands, if you're a zebra by yourself, you will die. Right. So that's hardwired into a horse as well, because of the evolution of the horse. They've been prey animals. We are the predator. And so we have to respect that, that horses take comfort by being in a herd.
Yes. And one more thing with these five freedoms as well, which I really love, is knowing as the horse person, we owe it to our horses to know when they must go to the next journey. Even though, see, this is where our humanness comes in to say, oh, but you know, if I give him some more drugs, maybe it will help him to feel more comfortable. Because we know horses can take on way more pain compared to what a human can. But what would a piece of advice be, and what would that look like? Because, you know, as humans, we just want to keep hanging on, but we know we owe it to the horse that we can't do that to these poor horses. Hmm. What would you say to us?
It's not about me.
Yeah.
So whenever I have people call me up because the veterinarian says it's time to euthanize your horse, or, you know, and I get phone calls, and they're very, very difficult because I've been through this myself. I mean, I've had to put my own horses down, and boy, it's hard, you know, and no one doubts that. But for that horse in that moment, the pain is all it knows. It's not like you and I that, oh, well, I can take an Advil and my headache will go away. Or I'll go to the doctor and they'll, you know, do surgery on my knee and I won't have that cartilage injury anymore. So horses can't think like that. So that's all they live in, that pain. And if we cannot guarantee that we can get them out of that pain or give them a quality of life, then we have to start thinking about, is this a life that the horse would think is worth living? And if all they have is pain and suffering there, then we have to start making that decision based on quality of life. And the moment you hear yourself going, I can't do this to my horse, I can't live without my horse, I can't give up my horse, I could never do this, we're back to the I thing. And we have to tell ourselves, look in the mirror and go, it's not about you. So one of the toughest things.
I'm sorry,
I missed you.
I said, by the time they're showing you pain, it's already at the point where, like, they're in real, real pain, right? So
yeah, and that's another point. I'm glad you mentioned that, because horses are incredibly stoic. Again, you're a prey animal. Do you want to advertise to the wolves and the coyotes, hey, I'm hurt, come get me?
Yeah.
You know, so horses learn to hide that pain. And when you see a horse in colic, where they're laying down and they're rolling and throwing themselves, they are in intense pain at that point in time. So, you know, you see a change in their eye, you might see that their jaw is kind of clenched, or maybe their nostrils are pinched back, their eyes are just a little bit closed and squinty. Those are all signs that the horse is not feeling well, and they get ignored. And so that's one of the things that people can learn. If we have an open mind, there is a tool called the facial grimace score in horses. And you can learn to assess your horse by looking at their eye, their ear, their head carriage, you know, whether their jaw is clamped tight, their nostrils, whether they're pinched, whether they're grinding their teeth. Those are all symptoms. And a very weird thing is that grimace score actually came out of testing on rabbits for cosmetics.
What?
It sounds awful, but yeah. They would put, for example, mascara into the eye of a rabbit. And they'd look for that facial grimace score. And so that it's a weird thing that now we're actually using it to enhance welfare of horses. But it's, you know,
wasn't nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been developed into something that's really useful. So, you know, look into the eye of your horse and you will see a difference if they're not feeling well. Horses will respond to pressure. So if you press against their side, then yes, that's part of the herd as well. If one horse crowds another, they pressure. And as soon as that horse moves away, we as humans need to release that pressure, right? And so then the horse learns. So if we want them to move over, we apply pressure, apply a little bit more pressure. The second that horse moves away from that pressure, we have to release, right? And that's one of the problems with some of our training methods. Because if you're going down the stretch and you're whipping the horse and it's running as fast as it can, but you're still whipping it, there's no release from that pressure. Right. It's the same with tight nose bands. If we've got a tight nose band on that horse, or you're constantly pulling on the bit, the horse never knows what's right and what's wrong. So you put a bit of pressure on them and give them a chance to react and immediately release the pressure. So yes, it's a very effective technique.
Very nice. And that's a really cool thing that actually pretty much all of our speakers have talked about far is that releasing piece. And I see Doug is on. Hi, Doug, because you're on there too. Oh, no, hi, Carson. But that's something that's been mentioned over and over and over again is the release of that pressure and how many people keep missing that part. But it's like if I want you to come with me and I don't let go, it doesn't make any sense, right?
Yes.
Exactly.
And we see that in round pen training where people are constantly cracking the whip. Mm-hmm. You know, you're telling your horse, trot on, trot on. And the horse is trotting and they're still flailing the whip around or cracking it. Well, leave the horse alone. He's trotting. That's what you asked him to do.
Yeah.
So if he slows down, you cluck to them, you get them back up into a trot, you know, and the whip part is down the road. So it's just like a dog that has aggressive tendencies. They first curl a lip. They may put their ears back. So that's like one or two on the 10 scale. And then they will, you know, stiffen their, you may see the hackles go up on their back. They may really draw their lips back and start snarling. They may snap. So they're going from 1 to 10 and the attack is the 10. And we should think that same way for us in terms of putting pressure on an animal. The lightest pressure you can put on to get the response is what we need to try and do. Absolutely. The more we increase the pressure, if we're always reacting with a 7, the horse starts to ignore us and now it's constantly punishment and they don't learn. And now we stress that horse and they're not going to be able to think about what it is we're asking them to do.
Absolutely. Very nice.
So, I love that. Yeah, just one thing. Remember, horses are what I call a quiet species. They want a quiet life. You think about wild horses, it is peaceful. They're not fighting all the time. You know, you've heard that phrase, nature red of tooth and claw. That's not what horses do. They interact with each other. It's a very quiet, soft life that horses generally want, unless there's, you know, confrontation between stallions and that kind of thing.
Of course.
But yeah, day to day, they're a quiet species.
Absolutely. True. You know, we tell so many of our clients as well, you know, it's humans who want touch, touch, touch all the time. Horses' gift is release. Let them just be let them just be released.
Yeah, this so little funny. Square we have.
Yeah, I can't release all the way.
There we go.
But you know, it's us as humans who always need to have that feeling of what that touch would be. Where, you know, with horses, a horse is a horse, but their gift really is give them that space to understand. Mm-hmm. Mistakes, be okay in their space. And our gift is that freedom to not be touched so much.
Right. Yeah. And we see that with horses. We see it with cats, dogs, that there's this need to hug them. There's this need to get our face into their face. Well, that's a predator.
Yep.
Right. You know, horses don't do that face-to-face thing. They don't hug each other. They will do mutual grooming, but by and large, just standing side by side is often enough for a horse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and on the horse portal, if you go to the horseportal.ca, you'll see horse owner tools, and there's a whole bunch of free things for horse owners. You can work through them on your own and actually do an assessment of your own place in the privacy of your own home. You don't have to talk to anybody about it. You can just sort of look at it. But the biggest thing is keep an open mind. We're learning new things. So the way my grandfather did stuff with horses may not be what I should be doing today. And just because your neighbor says to do it or whoever says to do it, open your mind, think about it, and do some real research on it to find some evidence-based new knowledge on it.
Absolutely. Oh, and I love evidence-based. That is the right stuff. Really look into all of that is offered in this industry, and especially from your university. The university as well has got everything that a brand newbie needs to have, or someone who's been with horses forever, but they know inside their gut, I think something is missing. Something I need to change now because I'm not understanding. So I love that you have that option for everything.
Well, and I was talking to a trainer the other day, and I just was absolutely heartbroken because this is a very well-known trainer doing well in the horse industry. And we got talking about education and the value of education. And his response to me was, I know enough.
Oh, well, their job was literally
that. That was my response. And, you know, and I had someone the other day ask me whether I'd be retiring sometime soon. And I said, you know, the day I wake up and say to myself, I know enough, I'm out of here because I failed.
Yeah,
It doesn't matter how long we're in the horse industry. There is lots more to learn.
Always, always is right. So ending in one question, which you've more or less answered in actually in all of the questions that we've asked, but maybe there's still one great piece of advice you would give against someone who's maybe looking or who has horses, who is knowing that there is more. What piece of advice would you give them for that welfare or what you would suggest? Besides all those great things you've already said.
Okay. Do not allow yourself to suffer from attitudinal sclerosis.
Ooh, attitudinal sclerosis. Whoa, you got go, Gail.
The hardening of the attitudes. So that is one of the biggest things that stops us is we think we know enough, all those phrases. But as soon as we have a hardening of the attitudes, we stop learning. And so I would ask everybody to keep an open mind and just keep learning.
I love it.
Sorry. I'm just going to say thank you because it's great working with you folks because I know you're pushing that whole welfare part and always education. And so together, if we can convince the industry to be always the student, working together is going to help achieve that.
Absolutely. Love collaboration and so excited to continue on with everything that we're all working towards.
Yes.
Our globally. We're doing global stuff now, right? All of us. And Facebook people.
Yeah.
We're all in it.
So thank you again so much, Gail. And thank you everybody who joined us today. Even if you're not catching us live and you're going to watch this later, please feel free to put in more questions and comments because we're happy to come back and take a look at them and answer. And we'll message Gail if we need to make sure we get the right answers for you as well. So have a great day, everybody, and keep learning about the welfares of your horse because they are
everything.
Thanks
Bye
so much.
Everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks so much for tuning in today with us gals from Equine Connection on today's episode of Changing Lives with a Horse, of course. Next week, we're going to have tons more information, and please join us then for more chatting on how these phenomenal creatures are really the best teachers around. We'll talk to y'all then.